Well, there was murder, suicide, but the game went on in the NFL. I want to talk to you about that, as well as what continues to unfold in the Middle East with Israel and the Palestinians and Egypt.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know what happens to me on Mondays? I am so pent up, excited about the whole week that lies ahead for me. It's thank God it is Monday. So much on my heart to talk with you about, some special interviews I recorded we're going to air tomorrow. And in the midst of this week, God willing, I will be traveling to India for my 20th ministry trip there, as well as broadcasting to you, for you, with you, live from India. But I'm right here in my normal studio ready to take your calls, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. In the Middle East, is it news? Can you even call it news, or is it just more of what we should expect every day? The Middle East continues to boil on the heels of the UN General Assembly vote last week, saying that there would be recognition of a Palestinian state as an observer state. This is now being proclaimed as a massive victory, East Jerusalem being proclaimed as the eternal capital of Palestine, and clear rhetoric making obvious that the goal is not a friendly two-state solution, but basically a Palestinian homeland that will dominate the region. We'll talk to you about that reaction from Israel, reaction from other parts of the world, as well as Egypt, with Islamist rule becoming stronger and stronger, or should we simply say consistent Muslim rule or radical Islam, whatever you want to fashion it, as it comes to increasing power in Egypt, protests both ways, both in support of the new government and its militancy, and many more opposing it. That could really reach an extraordinary, explosive level. But before we get to those things, I want to talk to you about something that happened here in the States over the weekend, which on the one hand is absolutely not on the level of significance as say, what took place in Israel, Palestinians, in Egypt, these national, critical, important issues. But this is something to talk about, and I want to get your feedback. I want to get your input. Are you ready? In case you didn't hear or weren't following it, on Saturday, a player for the Kansas City Chiefs, a football player, linebacker, who played for the team every game this year, murdered his live-in girlfriend. They are the parents of a three-month-old child, murdered his girlfriend. Now, he had actually campaigned against violence against women and had made a commitment to never be violent against women and campaigned for that. Yes, it was known that he was drinking a lot, according to reports, but this violence was, according to other reports, completely 100% out of character. All right, he kills his girlfriend and then proceeds to go to the stadium where he plays and sees the coach, general manager there, thanks them for everything they've done for him, thanks them for their help and for making him part of the team, and then in front of their eyes, pulls out a gun and kills himself. Now, they never felt their own lives were threatened, but this is what they witnessed on Saturday. Sunday, they played the game. Sunday, the game went on, as always. And I want to talk to you about that in terms of, is this a symptom of American obsession with sports and American idolatry with sports? Or was this actually a good decision for morale for the city? If you have an opinion on this already, I'd love to hear from you. 866-348-7884. We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for welcoming us into your home, into your car, into your place of business, to your headphones, wherever you are. Thanks for listening to the broadcast. 866-34-TRUTH. Tomorrow, got a really neat broadcast prepared for you. It'll be the first day of my travels to India. It's about a two-day journey to get to our final destination. And I recorded some interviews on Saturday that will really thrill you. Trust me, they'll be edifying and some amazing stories from the Muslim world. That's coming your way tomorrow. Today, my joy to take your calls and interact. 866-348-7884. Okay, let me again lay out the question regarding the Kansas City football game yesterday. One of their players, regular on the team, linebacker, on Saturday, kills his girlfriend, cold-blooded murder, which means now he has killed the mother of their three-month-old child. Goes from there to the stadium where he plays, where Kansas City was going to actually be playing, the Carolina Panthers, so based right here in Charlotte, from whence I broadcast. They were going to be having a game the next day. This player, the linebacker, shows up at the stadium. He has his gun on him. He talks to the coach, general manager who were there, thanking them for everything they did in his life, and so on, thanking him for letting him be a player on the team. They didn't feel their own lives were threatened, but he then takes out the gun and shoots himself, kills himself right then and there. Next day, this is now 24 hours later, there's going to be a football game. Now, I just want you to think about this. Think of someone in your family, a friend, coworker, kills their spouse, or in this case, live-in girlfriend, kills that person, and then, in front of your eyes, kills themselves. Now, 24 hours later, it's time to play. Time for a game. Can you imagine if you were that coach, if you were players on that team, if this directly affected you or your family, that you would go out and play the next day? Let me give the negative, then the positive, and then I want to interact with you about this. Here's the negative. How in the world are you going to just go on with life as normal after one of the regular players that people know, they know his name, they know his number, has now murdered someone and now taken his own life right there at that location, at that very stadium? 24 hours later, you're just going to have a game as if nothing happened. Okay, draw attention to it, and everyone has heavy heart. You're the coach. You actually saw this happen in front of your eyes, and 24 hours later, you're coaching a game. And on top of it, players are going to come in, and there's the guy's locker with his jersey hanging there, and he just murdered someone the day before and took his own life. And on top of it, is it possible that the reason he did what he did was because of his playing? In other words, that he had head injuries, as many other NFL players have had, and is now coming more and more into the public consciousness, that he had head injuries, that he was concussed on a number of occasions, which then clouded his thinking and his judgment. This has happened with professional wrestlers. This has happened with football players. Early this year, one of the most loved football players in his city killed himself. He's a retired player, but the feeling was that he was concussed so many times, head injuries, brain injuries, kept playing, kept going on. These guys are warriors and rough and tough, throw their bodies on the line. What if it was the game itself that contributed to these tragedies? Do you just go on and play? Well, on the other hand, you could say that the whole city is shocked that to come together in this way brings some level of healing. You could say that this is a way to unify together in memory of the woman that was killed and the man that killed himself, although he killed himself after murdering. You could say that this is our way of saying that we're going to address this together and overcome it together. Or is it just a matter of, hey, it's NFL, there's money involved and there's TV involved, and and you can't not have the game because we live and die based on football during a certain time of the year. Something that got my attention, I was wondering how it was going to be handled. Should there have been comments throughout the whole game? Every few minutes, we have heavy hearts. Was it done enough by the commentators once the game happened? Of course, the coach addressed it with sensitivity afterwards and said, look, this is what we do. In other words, this is what we do on Sunday. This is our job. This is what we do as professionals. Therefore, we showed up and did it. It's obviously a difficult question, but I thought it would be worth talking about because it does tie in with a lot of the American mentality and focus on sports and even the violence of sports. So I thought it was worth talking about for a few minutes. Steven in Ocean, New Jersey, you're up first. What are your thoughts, sir?
Dr. Brown, thank you for giving me a few minutes. I'm a sports fan, and I'm a believer. And basically, what you saw in was it was about the money. It's always about money. And I understand the coach. I understand that it's his job. But you had so much money involved with television, with the seats in the stadium, with the revenue from the parking and the food stands. It's always about the money, brother.
Mm-hmm. So,
and,
go ahead.
That's what I expected to happen. That they would play the game and they would do what they did. But there was a lot of money made on yesterday's game. Probably even more money because more people watched the game.
Right. Did you watch any part of it yourself?
The New York area didn't get the game.
Right.
But it went into almost went into overtime. It was a close game, and they showed the end of a little bit of the game here in the New York area. But
yeah,
I knew that they were going to play.
Yeah, I was home, Steve, in the afternoon, and I was doing some writing and other things, but I did watch part of the game because it was against Carolina, so it was broadcast right here. And I was curious to see how much they talked about the tragedy. And they probably did at the beginning, which I didn't see. And then periodically they would say, you know, a day of heavy hearts and so on. They'd make reference to it. But when it came to the halftime show, the halftime guys just went through all the other scores just as if everything was normal. And then at the end, talked about, you know, heavy hearts in Kansas City. I guess in my mind, the whole league should have said, okay, heavy hearts today, but the game's, you know, start there. Well, I watched part of the game at night, and I watched during the halftime to see how they addressed it. And interestingly, the entire halftime show, whichever it was, NBC, whoever does Sunday Night Football, the entire halftime show was devoted to talking about this situation and not covering what happened with other games. I felt that was a right way to handle that part since the game did go on. And also, there was a commentary by Bob Costas, which unfortunately he used as a platform to talk about gun control, which I really didn't think was the issue to bring up at that point. But in your mind, overall, was it a good decision or a bad decision? You've made it clear that you think it was money and all of that. Do you think it was a good or bad decision to go ahead with the game?
Well, let me make this statement. When President Kennedy was shot, that weekend, they still played all the NFL games. So that tells you how powerful the NFL is, television revenue, all the sponsors. It's always about the money.
Yeah. Now, not after 9/11, that weekend, they did not play the games. And I remember players saying, hey, look, it's only a game. And I respect athletes. I respect dedication and hard work in any profession. I recognize that goes into it. And these guys put their lives on the line. But the national obsession we have with sports, not just in America. I mean, you take the World Cup with soccer in different nations. It's even more intense. But there is this obsession with something that's going to pass away. That's ultimately just a game. And yeah, serious questions come up. No question about the money issues. But Stephen, thank you, sir, for weighing in. And by the way, those who listen regularly, no, this is not sports talk radio. It's not conservative talk radio. It's not sports talk radio. And I'm addressing this issue because it ties in with the larger mentality in America of our obsession with sports, with entertainment, with our lack of focus on eternal things. And that focus on eternal things helps us to have a focus for this world. But again, yesterday, day before, agonizing days for many, many people. And in no way do I want to trivialize this. My discussion is my way of taking all of these things seriously. Back with your calls.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, blessed, delighted to be with you. We will get to discussion later in the broadcast about the Middle East, more major issues. Monday is our day of musings, so whatever's on my mind, whatever I'm burdened with, whatever I want to talk to you about, whatever I think will be of help and benefit to you, that's what we do on Mondays, 866-348-7884. Or you can weigh in on my Facebook page. That's Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on Facebook. Now, players made somewhat of a shrine at the locker room of the man that killed his girlfriend and then took his own life at his locker, I should say. And some have reported that the language discussing what happened was almost morally neutral, as if this man did not murder his girlfriend and the mother of their child in cold blood and take his own life, thereby rendering this three-month-old an orphan. No mom, no dad. Was it because the players thought that something was going on due to head injuries and that this man was not himself? The Kansas City Chiefs did not start the day with a moment of silence in his memory, but rather in a more positive move in the memory of all victims of domestic violence, recognizing this was not just a suicide, but a murder-suicide. Nonetheless, tragic event. Was it right for the game to go on the next day? Should it have even just been moved to a later time, just as a token statement, you know, a few hours later? If they're going to play it, should the head coach have said, I'm going to send someone else in my place? I mean, he witnessed this right in front of his eyes, witnessed someone take his own life 24 hours earlier than you coach. Or was this a noble, courageous thing to do that in the end brought some measure of healing with it and focused on what happened with a purposeful way to say we need to understand these things better and move forward? 866-34-TRUTH. James in Washington, D.C., thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, God bless. Thank you, Dr. Brown, even for taking on this issue. It's important that we discuss it. And I'm not by any means condoling the decision that they made, but I think the decision makers looked at a broader scope that, okay, you got people traveling from out of town. You've got a lot of, you know, you got a whole entire season that now has to be adjusted. You have investors. You have a lot of different people that are going to be affected broadly because of the decision that they make to cancel the game. But having said that, I think that we need to take a larger look at society as a whole rather than just focusing in on the NFL. Because mm-hmm. it is a tragedy that the whole entire society, that you would actually have disgruntled people, whether they had to travel, whether they had to take the day off, where they had to make adjustments in their own life, that they would be so disgruntled that they couldn't understand why it would be canceled. So it really speaks volumes of society as well as the NFL.
Yeah, and Stephen, you know, it raises, it raises one other issue, which is if America was a God-fearing nation, then we would definitely have a Sabbath day in our midst. If it was based on Christian tradition, we'd be having a Sunday Sabbath. If it was based on Jewish tradition or Old Testament law, it would be a Saturday Sabbath. But In other words, if we were a God-fearing nation, then we wouldn't have as a major central event football, either college football on Saturday or professional football on Sunday. Now, it's the, I understand a football player can say, well, my Sabbath is Monday or something like that, just like a pastor or preacher might say, you know, I push hard through the weekend and Monday is my Sabbath day. I'm just saying, as a whole, as a nation, if we were a God-fearing nation, you would have some differences in terms of how one day of the week was conducted, and sports would have to function around that. But thank you for the call. I appreciate it. 866-348-7884. Let's go to Stephen in New York City. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello, Michael. My view is that, you know, it's just symptomatic of the violence and brutality of our times. I mean, you look at the video games, the movies, and all the rest, and the world, by that way. Violence is symptomatic of our times. It's terrible. It's vicious. It's a very large scale. You know, the old days, you know, I'm a little bit older. And, you know, now people get killed by the tens and twenties and, you know, group suicides and all this stuff. And it's part of the despair and it's, you know, the world that looks upon itself as godless, pointless, fruitless. And this is what you get. It's the end result of an attitude that's basically anti-religious, getting so more and more. And this is what you get. This is what you get. There's no light at the end of the tunnel and total despair.
Yeah, I certainly believe that the increase in violence, the cheapening of life, the suicides, you know, now we're addressing the issue of unprecedented number of suicides with our troops overseas.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And, you know, is it general hopelessness? Is it just an increase of violence in the culture? I know certain other ways when you look at stats that violence is down, but just the prevalence of it, even the degree of it in America compared to other countries, raises lots of questions. And to me, it's just another reminder with you of how deeply we need reviving, of how deeply we need awakening, of how the enemy who comes to steal, kill, and destroy has so much access to so, so many lives. All right, friends, phone lines are lit up. I'm going to keep this conversation going. 866-348-7884. Tonight, I've got to do a lot of work before leaving for India tomorrow. Again, we've got some very special broadcasts prepared for you, some interviews tomorrow that are really going to be eye-opening and perhaps life-changing for you as you listen, and then a special broadcast Wednesday, and then, God willing, live Thursday, Friday from India. So please do pray for grace on the trip, for strength, blessing for me, and a couple of team members that will be traveling with me along with their little baby. So that'll be an interesting trip for everyone. But I'm hoping to write an article on this subject and work through some of these issues. If I do, you'll be able to see links to it on my Facebook page, AskDrBrown.org. We'll let you know where to find it. One thing, though, on a happier note, Friday was Nancy's birthday, and I decided to do something kind of outrageous right before the show. I mean, really, it was outrageous enough that we're sitting around trying to figure out, like, can we actually even afford to do this? But we did it, got an amazing response. I'm going to do it again today. If you buy one copy of my book, The Real Kosher Jesus, which continues to get rave reviews, we alone have the hardcover. So the hardcover of the book with postage, $30. If you buy one copy, I'll give you another copy free of the hardcover. Okay, we've never done that before. Plus, free, I'll give you the two-hour DVD debate moderated by Sid Roth, Who is the Real Kosher Jesus? $75 value for $30, but we're doing, I think, one more day. So call today, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Or go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, and click on the online bookstore. Friends, let's pray for sanity, for return to God. In America, we need it.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted and blessed to be with you. Just asking your perspective on the Kansas City Chiefs game on Sunday against the Carolina Panthers. Should it have gone on as it did? It's a difficult question. Some think, of course not. No way it could have. Others see the reasoning behind it. The head of the owner of the team gave it to the coach and the players to make the decision. They decided to go on with the game after one of their teammates, one of their regular players, shot and killed his girlfriend, mother of their three-month-old child, killed her in cold blood, and then killed himself in the presence of his coach and general manager after thanking them for their help, killed himself at the very stadium where they were going to play 24 hours later. Does that trivialize the lives that were lost? Does that trivialize the nature of murder and suicide? Or was it a right thing to do? 866-348-7884. A right thing to do in terms of going on with the game. All right. An anonymous call. Well, we lost it. All right. It was an anonymous caller from Virginia. I was going to take the call, but out of respect to there must have been a good reason why this person wanted to be anonymous. But I was honestly wondering why they would be anonymous about something like this. Is it that their own life is threatened in a violent relationship? Is that they're a professional athlete and didn't want to be recognized? Anyway, we won't know at this point why they wanted to be anonymous. Norman in Hyattsville, Maryland, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, sir.
Okay. I'm on Bluetooth. That's why I was wondering. Listen, Scripture forewarns us that in the last days, wicked men will wax worse and worse. And in light of that, I think that we as Christians ought to be less amazed when wicked men do what is natural to them, and that our surprise really ought to come from the goodness that shows through in mankind. And I really think that we as believers ought not expect the world and the world system to behave in a moral, in any moral fashion. It's the world. They're not believers. They have no relationship with God, and they just do what is natural for them to do. And in light of all of that, it does not surprise me that the game went on. I think we all, I think your listeners are fairly educated individuals, and we all know and understand that it is about the money. But absent a relationship with God, there can only be two gods. There is the God, and there is the God of mammon. And Jesus told us that you cannot serve two masters. So the world is simply serving their master. And I think we ought not be surprised, amazed, or anything like that, at what occurred and at any other such things that occur between now and the time Jesus returns.
Yeah, and you know, Norman, just generally speaking, if you think back to after the fall that Cain kills Abel, so the very first boy born to the human race, the very first child born kills his brother, so we had fratricide. Yes. And then after the flood, God says the reason he won't wipe out the earth is because the thoughts of man's hearts are evil continually from our youth. In other words, it shouldn't surprise us when wicked people act wickedly. I do agree with you. And I've said that in similar terms over the years. And yes, the closer we get to the end of the age, we can expect an increase in wickedness just as we can expect an increase in the move of God. But again, it does underscore the terribly fallen nature of the human race and how deeply we need Jesus to enter in and change hearts and change lives. Thank you, sir, for the call. All right, I'm going to take a couple more calls on the subject, give a few concluding reflections, and then change over from this topic to a focus on the Middle East, as well as other questions you want to ask me. If you've got something on your mind, you've been wondering about, wanted my input, we'll try to get to a few more calls too. Stay with us.
It's It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on this day before my beginning of the journey to India, 20th trip there. So please be praying. And again, this time tomorrow, you should be hearing some amazing testimonies. I don't say the word amazing lightly, amazing testimonies from the Muslim world in terms of what Jesus is doing. 866-348-7884. We're just going to take a couple more minutes and talk about the football game that took place in Kansas City over the weekend after one of the players 24 hours earlier had shot and killed his girlfriend, cold-blooded murder, left behind a three-month-old baby, their baby, and then killed himself in the presence of his coach and general manager, whom he spoke to at the stadium before doing what he did, taking his own life. And then 24 hours later, they did play the game. They started with a moment of silence in memory of victims of domestic violence, which was certainly a better thing to do than to simply say in memory of this player, because he didn't just kill himself. He murdered his girlfriend. Again, was this due to head injuries and other issues? The intensity of the violence of the sport, was this due to just he opened the door to hell and committed hellish acts, and it's completely unrelated to the fact that he was a football player? Was it right or wrong to go on with the game? That's what we've been talking about. I've got a few reflections of my own, but first, your calls. Let me take a few more calls on this. Bob in Boston. Oh, we don't have Bob in Boston anymore. Adam in East Texas. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, this is Adam. I wanted to ditto Norman's call a while ago. He really summed it up. We can't expect the secular people to behave like us, because what should have been going on is they should have been fasting and praying. Instead, they were rising up a great while before day, Dr. Brown. They were preparing briskets and tailgate parties. They were sitting around with paraphernalia and things that resemble them and make them a unit. And they were saying, let's eat, drink, and party down, for tomorrow we die. And naturally, we know that that's not the way to behave. And thank you for all you do, Dr. Brown, and enjoy your trip in India.
All right. Thank you, sir, for the call. I appreciate it. Adam weighing in plainly there. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Charlie in Charleston, West Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown, for taking my call. Actually, it's Charlestown. The capital is Charleston. We're 9 hours away, believe it or not. Go ahead, sir.
No, go ahead. Back to you.
Okay. There was a caller from New York, I believe, that called in and had remembered that when John F. Kennedy had been assassinated, that the NFL went ahead and played its game. Well, I had heard a little bit of history on that the other day, that Pete Rozelle, who was the commissioner at the time, called Peter Salinger, who was JFK's press secretary, and asked what he thought he should do. And Peter Salinger said, probably go ahead and play the game and bring some type of normalcy back, you know, into the nation.
Well, right, and just to jump in, I as strange as that sounds, especially looking back at it historically, sometimes when you're faced with personal tragedy or national tragedy, there is this thing to say, okay, we are going to go on. We are not going to bow down to this. But on the flip side, when do you stop then? If the assassination of the president was not big enough to cause us to have a weekend of mourning and not going on with normal schedule, when are we going to stop and reflect?
I believe that. But Peter Rozelle later said that it was the in all his years as commissioner, it was the very worst decision that he had ever made.
Really?
Yes, he did. He came to that conclusion because the AFL didn't play.
Oh, so it was just the NFL. So the that NFL, was basically when it was two separate leagues. Okay, I wasn't
time.
Even aware of that. Got it. All right,
yes,
and you
Brown,
just
I
saw
appreciate it. Your ministry. I listen to it as many days as I possibly can, and love everything you do.
Well, thank you, sir, for the call. I appreciate that. All right, I just learned some things I was not aware of. I was 8 years old when JFK was assassinated. So, obviously, my memories about whether there was a football game that Sunday or not was obviously not paramount in my thinking or my mind. But I appreciate that information. All right, two more calls on this, Andrew, and then we will move on. John in New York City, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Brown. I don't believe the game should have been played, but it is almost impossible to cancel such a game at the time it was scheduled for many other factors involved. One of it mainly is the finances involved. But if I look up on the broader spectrum of this life, what is happening in America today, you know, the day that Michael Vick went to jail for dog fighting, a Manhattan doctor announced that he alone had done 300 abortions that year. So what kind of society have we become?
Yeah, and the abortion doctor in certain circles is celebrated as one who's helping women and the poor, and someone who engaged in dog fighting goes to jail and is a national criminal. Right.
Right. So contrasting this, where are our priorities of compassion and really bravery, as we say, America, land of the free and home of the brave, which essentially is true. There is not a country like that. As an immigrant to this country, but lived here for almost 50 years, I came here in my youth. And I believe in America, and I love this country. But there's something terribly wrong that's going, to which the pulpits of America are not addressing. We seem to forget that God rules in the affairs of men, as Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, rightly said. We cannot grow and bring back the jobs as we assume. You know, they say that there's something wrong with the economy. But what's wrong, what's dreadfully wrong, is the morality. That's really wrong.
Yeah, and John, I wrote an article last year when President Clinton was running for office the first time. His people told him, look, you've got to put your emphasis on the economy. And he had a sign in front of him all the time. It's the economy, stupid. Got to remember that. So I wrote an article last year called "It's the Morality, Stupid," and that's ultimately. I wrote it last year. If you just put my name in internet and then "It's the Morality, Stupid," you'll find it. So yeah, ultimately there's a greater purpose and destiny to America and higher, loftier goals, and we often just get so caught up with the things of this age and of this world. Well, John, thanks for your kind perspective as an immigrant many years ago to our shores. All right, last call on this subject. JJ in Friendswood, Texas, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, I love your show, man. I listen to it all the time.
Thank you, sir.
This NFL thing,
yeah,
it's totally irrelevant to your show. I didn't even give it a second thought as far as what they ought to do. We're killing, at least that little baby got a chance to live. I don't know how many we're killing on Sundays. I guess they still kill them. But at least this baby got a chance to live. And at least the mom had the baby. And I guess at least that guy wanted one at one time. So this is...
Well, I mean, he had actually been involved in a group that campaigned against violence against women, which makes this all the more insane. But let me tell you why it is relevant, JJ, because obviously we don't talk sports on this show. This is not, you know, sports radio, obviously, as you know if you listen. But in my book, Revolution, the Call, the Holy War, I have a chapter on smashing the idols and talking about some of the idols in our society that we need to smash. And one of them is the idol of obsession with sports. And It's not to say that all sports are wrong, or that people shouldn't be in professional sports, or that we shouldn't play sports with our friends. It's to say that our obsession with sports is an idol in America. And that was the reason I brought this up, was to say is this part of the idolatry of sports in America? After this event, and I wondered when I heard the report, and there's going to be a game there the next day. See, if it was on the road, it would have even been less of an issue. But right there at that stadium where the suicide was committed after the murder, and in the presence of the coach and the general manager, were they going to go on with the game? And they did, and obviously tried to do it with sensitivity. But in the midst of it, how much were fans saying, hey, this really doesn't matter, it's just a game. Guy murdered the mother of his child and took his own life. Shouldn't we be stopping to reflect on that? But that is my reason for bringing it up at all. Thank you for your opinion and your input, JJ. Appreciate it. All right, back with some reflections. Some reflections on the idolatry of sports in America.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, being a voice of moral, cultural, spiritual revolution means addressing some of the strongholds in our society, some of the idolatry in our society. Men have it, women have it, children have it, adults have it. In other words, every one of us in one way or another can get caught up with the idolatry of the age, be it the idolatry of music, the idolatry of sports, the idolatry of entertainment, the idolatry of fashion, the idolatry of pride, the idolatry of whatever it is that grips us and takes our eyes off the things of eternity. I have spoken plainly about the fact that games are games, and that the degree that we get into, oh, what a shot, a hole in one, and he's going to win the tournament. It's just a game. It's just a game, and people just made up certain rules, and now I don't doubt that the golfers are tremendous at what they do, and it takes, you know, years of practice and hard work and dedication. And I don't doubt that there's some committed believers among them, but the obsession with, he missed the field goal, the closing seconds, and the whole city's mourning. It's just a game. It's just a game. So one of the idols that we need to smash is the idol of obsession with sports. I write about this in my Revolution book. It's not to say that all sport is sin. Some sport would be sin based on the nature of it, based on what it would do. Say, like dog fighting that was mentioned a little while ago. You know, abusive to the animals, and then the ones that didn't perform well enough just killed in various grisly manners. That I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the idol of obsession with sports. Even sports in and of themselves are perfectly fine. And as I wrote in Revolution, this is one of the greatest idols of our day. We are fanatically devoted to sports, especially the men, some women too. We live for it. Depressed for days when the home team loses, and elated beyond words when they win it all. How our emotions and desires are caught up with sports. How our time is consumed by it, watching game after game, listening to passionate discussions on sports radio, scouring the newspapers for the latest stats and the hottest stories. In fact, in many cities in America, Sunday services must end promptly at noon, lest there be a conflict with the NFL game starting at 1. But it's only a game, you say? No, it's not. No, it should be, but it's not the way it's worked out. No one gets paid $6 million a year or more to play only a game. No one is vilified by the national press for losing only a game. No one schedules church services around only a game. No one shoots a player to death for making a stupid play in only a game. That's happened, by the way, in soccer. It's become an idol, an obsession, an almost sacrosanct preoccupation, and the Christian world buys right into it. Yes, I believe sports is fun and often exhilarating both to play and to watch and to follow, and I do all of those things. But I believe even more than that it has gotten totally out of hand in our society. There are more leagues than we can follow, more teams than we can track, more games, more events, more tournaments, more stars, and more hype. Sports has been so glorified that it's almost become deified. Slow motion replay of a reverse slam dunk seems almost supernatural. Wow. You'd almost think that the angels in heaven stood in rapt attention, watching with wonder and awe. We even have a theology of sports. We believe that the more Christian athletes a team has, the more that team will win. But does the Lord's team always win? The fact is that spirituality doesn't always equal success, and God's greatest lessons are often learned in the furnace of affliction, not in the spotlight of adoration. Maybe losing is sometimes best for God's team. How contrary this is to most all of our theology in America. For a believer, which is more important, becoming like Jesus or winning? Is it true that winning isn't everything, or is this just another meaningless moral platitude? Of course, I'm glad when a Christian athlete on a winning team unashamedly gives the glory to God for his accomplishments. I'd certainly rather hear this than hear him take the credit himself, or worse yet, praise some other god or religion. But we make it something cosmic, as if it was almost a spiritual defeat. When the Nigerian Muslim Hakeem Olajuwon led his basketball team to 2 straight titles, or when Michael Jordan, not known as a religious man, led his team to 6 championships. But when an NBA player recently praised Allah for his team's astonishing playoff win, it actually put things in perspective for us. It seems silly to give Allah credit for helping someone win a basketball game. Did Allah really care about it? And did he favor one team because of the presence of a nominal Muslim while Jesus was too weak to help the other team with a number of Christians win that night? My point is simply this. Even fine, upstanding, highly moral Christian athletes buy right into the idolatry of sports. Should we thank God that there are men and women serving as role models to our children? Yes. Should we be grateful that many of them use their high profile to spread the good news of Jesus? Of course. Should we begrudge them for making so much money when the industry gladly pays it? No. And hopefully they'll use it wisely and rightly. But is it wrong for us to grieve when a top Mormon athlete, rather than a top Christian athlete who postpones his professional career? Let me read that again. Is it wrong for us to grieve when it is a top Mormon athlete, rather than a top Christian athlete, who postpones his professional career to spend 2 years on the mission field? And is it wrong for us to wonder where today's CT studs are, forgoing the accolades of sports to give their best years to winning souls as opposed to winning games? And is it wrong for us to expect at least one outspoken Christian athlete to say, hey, look, it's immoral for me to make $5 million a year for playing a game. I can live very well on $1 million a year, so I'm giving the rest to foreign missions and inner city work. How this would renounce the idolatry of it all, perhaps some Christian owners could follow suit, and I do believe some do. Anyway, I wrote a little bit more about it. You can read it in my Revolution book. Question I ask. Ask yourself if Jesus is really the Lord of my life, and if heaven and hell are real, why am I so consumed and dominated by these sports games? All right, something to think about. Something to think about. It's not just men and women, and we each have our areas where there can be idolatry in our lives. Let's smash the idols and honor God and live for Him, and then fully participate as His people in this world. Friends, I don't know if you heard what happened on Friday. On a positive, happy note, in honor of Nancy's birthday, I decided to do something kind of crazy and offer more extravagant than anything we've ever done on the show. One where we're sitting calculating, is it even possible to do this? But we went ahead and did it, and the response was such, I decided to extend it again today and tomorrow. So here is the offer. Buy one copy of The Real Kosher Jesus, number one book I've ever written to give to a Jewish person seeking with questions, number one book I've written to give to a Christian to find out more about the Jewish Jesus, an eye-opener. $30 with postage paid, the hardcover version, we alone have that. Buy that and we'll give you free with it a second hardcover of the book, plus free the 2-hour DVD debate moderated by Sid Roth, Who is the Real Kosher Jesus, a $75 value, $30 postage paid. But seriously, it is a limited time offer. I know it sounds like hype, but it's just the truth. 1-800-278-9978. Great for holiday presents, too. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, that number is 1-800-278-9978. Or go online to our online bookstore. Just click on askdrbrown.org, and then click on the online bookstore, and you can order right there. My bottom line today, if Jesus really is the Lord of your life, and if heaven and hell are real, why are you so consumed and dominated by sports? Well, there was murder, suicide, but the game went on in the NFL. I want to talk to you about that, as well as what continues to unfold in the Middle East with Israel and the Palestinians and Egypt.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it is my joy to be with you today on The Line of Fire. Today's Monday. Tomorrow, yeah, it's Tuesday, but it's the day I leave for my 20th trip to India, God willing. I'm traveling with two team members from our ministry with their baby as well. So it's going to be quite an amazing trip. If you could be praying for us, that would be awesome. And, we're not going to miss a day of broadcasting. Fear not. In fact, we hope to be coming your way live from India Thursday and Friday, which means I'll be broadcasting from 12:30 to 2:30 in the morning. So be sure to tune in every day. Well, no, 12:30 to 2:30 India time. It'd be normal time here in America. That's why I'm doing it in the middle of the night there in India. It'd be normal time here in America. But there's some tremendous interviews you're going to hear tomorrow, and then a special broadcast on Wednesday, and then live from India Thursday, Friday, everything going well. So be sure not to miss a day this week. Now, I want to hear from you on a number of different issues. Here's the number to call, 866-348-7884, 866-348-7884. I just spent the better part of an hour talking with listeners in different parts of America about what happened yesterday in the NFL. A player in the Kansas City Chiefs, a linebacker, regular player on the team, Saturday morning killed his girlfriend, the mother of their three-month-old child, shot her in cold blood, went from there with his gun to the stadium where the Chiefs were going to be playing the Carolina Panthers yesterday, so that was the next day, and then talked to the coach, talked to the general manager, thanked them for everything, and then right there in the stadium, I guess the parking lot, wherever they were, pulled out the gun and killed himself, took his own life. And they did play the game the next day. We did talk about that, right or wrong, to play the game. They did have a moment of silence for victims of domestic violence, of course. In the press conference afterwards, they addressed all these issues and how they made the decision and the pain of it and so on. We talked about that in the last hour. I may come back to that a little bit this hour. I want to focus, though, on the Middle East again. Monday is a day when I can catch up on things that happened over the weekend or talk about other things that are on my heart. So I do want to focus on the Middle East. And before we get to Israel, let's recognize that things are in an extremely, extremely volatile state in Egypt right now. An extremely, extremely volatile state. The Muslim Brotherhood, which those in the know have been saying for many months, represents radical Islam, represents hardcore Islam. They are now the elected leaders of Egypt. And immediately after the ceasefire between Hamas and Israel last week, President Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood, said that they are taking basically absolute control, absolute power, pushing forth their constitution, courts, nobody can fight against them. Demonstrations again by the tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands, demonstrating against the government. It's been pointed out, there's nothing in the constitution that says it's illegal to own a slave. And of course, women in a very subservient role in the midst of it. Others saying this is the way it's going to be going. This type of situation, friends, is going to be happening more and more in the Muslim world. The conflict between radical Islam, hardcore Islam, traditional Islam, and a more democratic movement, more of a freedom movement, the conflicts are coming.
Clean single flame. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You will hear some amazing testimonies from the Muslim world tomorrow. Just incredible testimonies of what the Lord is doing and how Jesus is reaching out directly to these Muslim men and women and saving them. Eyewitness reports, you're going to hear some tomorrow. 866-34-TRUTH. But what you can expect to see more and more, based on my reading of the situation, is that you're going to have these two different aspects within Islam, two different aspects, the hardcore and the liberal. The hardcore, perhaps in some of these countries, represented mainly by the older generation. The liberal side represented primarily by the younger generation and perhaps women as well. But beginning in the late 70s, there was a rise in Islamic fundamentalism, and the champion of that rise was Ayatollah Khomeini. At that time, he was exiled in France. He had been exiled by the Shah of Iran. And Iran, with its ancient history, with its antiquity, its ancient Persian history and pedigree, was a Muslim nation, but in many ways secular, worldly. When I say Muslim nation, I mean it was predominantly Muslim in terms of its population, but the Shah was known as a more secular man, and radical Islam was a minority within the country. Well, with the rise of Ayatollah Khomeini, he was banished to France. At this point, he's already an older man. In other words, he's, what, 50s, 60s, so he's not just some kid looking ahead several generations. And according to what I had heard, he basically told the Shah, the ones that are going to rise up with me are still in their mother's bellies. Now, right, sure, you're an old man, you're going into exile. Well, of course, he comes back into power. And what, was he in his 60s at this point or older? He comes back into power. Basically, what happens is he would give teachings in France. They would then be smuggled in on cassette tape and given to the Muslim leaders in the country. They would then preach on Fridays these messages of revolt against the government and these messages in favor of radical Islam. And then as a result of that, the Shah had to flee for his life. The uprising so massive, involving millions of people, the Shah had to flee for his life before Khomeini ever arrived back in the country. If you want to see an eye-opening video, Get it. I think you can still order it from, say, Amazon.com. It's called God Fights Back, The Rise of Religious Fundamentalism, beginning in the late 1970s. Oh, and when you contrast the Islamic version with the American Christian version in terms of devotion, it's kind of embarrassing. Of course, theirs went the way of physical violence as well, but I'm just talking about the level of devotion. It's kind of embarrassing when you see the contrast between that and what happened here in America. In any case, with Khomeini began the modern Islamic revolution that has swept to so many countries in the world and has fueled the fires of radical Islam. And as it rises, say with a group like Hamas in Gaza, as it rises with Hezbollah in Lebanon, yes, violent, murderous groups in terms of their feelings towards America and Israel. As it rises in parts of the former Soviet Union, as it rises in different parts of Africa, with it, there is also the fact that more and more people are being exposed to the West. More and more people have internet access. More and more people are realizing through the media that there's a whole other culture out there. Now, even though much of the culture is worldly and sinful, it's still what they're being exposed to. And they see it and want some of the freedoms and want some of the liberties and feel that the Islam they're being presented with is oppressive. Now, the people protesting the Muslim Brotherhood government now in Egypt, they are Muslims. I'm sure you have some non-Muslims among them, but they are predominantly Muslims fighting against what they would say is radical Islam or hardcore Islam or strict Sharia law and I expect this conflict to rise in the coming years. And in the midst of it, I expect God to continue to move as he has been moving. I expect to see an increase as upheaval comes, as these factions rise. I expect to see this exploited by the Holy Spirit for evangelism. Okay, here's a report from today. Hamas, state needs armed struggle. Osama Hamdan says that a Palestinian state without an armed struggle is really no benefit for the Palestinians. In other words, the vote that took place at the UN last week, he says, no big deal. Palestinian state without an armed struggle against Israel is an illusion and won't add anything for the Palestinians. Top Hamas official Osama Hamdan was quoted Sunday as saying. Hamdan, who is based in Beirut, said that the result of the UN General Assembly vote last Thursday on the statehood bid was a political step, but not a victory or great achievement. He pointed out that the PLO already had representation in the UN. Quote, the PLO has paid a heavy political price for this representation because it relinquished its claims to the lands of 1948. In other words, in order to be recognized, well, they'd have to say that Israel has a right to exist. So that would mean the original borders, 1948 or pre-1967 borders. Okay, Israel has a right to that, has a right to exist. What they're saying, Hamas is saying, no, Israel doesn't have a right to be there, period. You got to go back before 1948. They have no right to be there, period. Hamdan said, therefore, the real achievement lies in the liberation of the land, the return of the refugees, and achieving steadfastness on the land. These are the achievements which the people respect and appreciate. The Hamas leader said that the UN vote in favor of upgrading the Palestinian status would be considered a political achievement only if it were part of a comprehensive strategy for liberation, with the resistance being its main basis. Hamdan explained that Hamas had welcomed the statehood bid because it reflected the international community's readiness to fix what had corrupted in Palestine. He also reiterated Hamas's commitment to the armed struggle against Israel. He said that his movement would continue to seek, quote, the liberation of Palestine from the river to the sea. In other words, Hamas stands exactly where it has always stood, namely, Israel must be annihilated. Israel must be wiped out, period. There is no place for a Jewish state in the land. The conflict with Gaza, which was before this most recent bid, this now successful bid to be recognized on a certain level by the UN, by the Palestinian Authority. The conflict in Gaza escalated when Hamas lobbed hundreds and hundreds of bombs into its territories, trying to kill, wound, terrorize as many Israeli citizens as possible. The Israelis then, with pinpoint bombing, they actually put this up on YouTube so you could see exactly how they did this. They killed Ahmad Jabari, who was military leader in Hamas. In other words, the man responsible for many of these operations. He was killed in his car along with Hamas member Mohammed al-Homs. Here are quotes from brother, mother, daughter, and son of Mohammed al-Homs, who was killed along with Ahmad Jabari by a pinpoint Israeli strike. The brother says this, Allah be praised. This was aired November 16th, 2012 on Al-Aqsa TV. Allah be praised. All the young Muslims in Gaza love martyrdom, just as our enemies, the infidel Jewish dogs, love life. We continue on the same path and pray to meet him in paradise. His mother, this is the martyr's youngest boy. This is from the TV show. His name is Mashal. He named him after the great leader, Khalid Mashal. Allah willing, little Mashal will become like the big Mashal. We are all moving forward for the sake of Allah. Daughter says this, I want to fire missiles at the Jews and be martyred like my father. The mother, we all hope to become martyrs for the sake of Allah. Even if they kill us all, we will continue to fire missiles. We will not stop the jihad. And the son, I'm following the path of jihad and want to be martyred like my dad. Okay, I understand that from their perspective, this was dad. this was the woman's son's, my boy, that was killed. And from their perspective, he was killed by the evil Israelis. I understand their perspective. That's how deeply entrenched this hatred of Israel and the Jewish people is, and that's how deep this cycle of violence now is. What I want to point out again is that there is no peace talk solution. There's no peace talk solution to the problems in the Middle East right now. There can only be a divine solution. And any peace solution that seems in any way comprehensive to me is just going to be a false one that will pave the way for further warfare, destruction, before Jesus returns. Let's pray for God's grace to be poured out among the people of Israel and the Palestinians.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the broadcast today. I do have a few questions I want to put out to you and ask you about, get your feedback on in a little while, but a few more things I want to share with you. By the way, is a gentleman I spoke with earlier today on his 26th birthday, and if you happen to be listening to the broadcast now in Atlanta, hey man, keep the fire burning brightly. Oh yeah. 866-348-7884. All right, I'll ask this question. I'm going to put this question out. I don't even know where some of these places are, to be honest with you. When the UN voted last week, 138-9, saying that there would be an official recognition of a Palestinian state with calls for return to 67 borders and so on, that there would be an official recognition of this as an observer state in the General Assembly. So not full membership, but as an observer state. The vote was 138 for it, 9 against it, 41 abstained. All right, here's the list of 9. You tell me if you know where all these places are. Are you ready? There are two. I'm sorry to say, I apologize if any listeners from these countries are listening that I don't know exactly where you're located. I have to look it up on a map, but I'm thrilled to see that you voted the way you did. God will bless you for that. So here are the countries that voted against it. Well, Israel, quite naturally. Canada. Very pleased to see that. The United States, both U.S. and Canada were vocal in voting against this. Okay, how about Panama? Right, you know where Panama is. Again, that's a very positive thing to see that vote. Latin America, Czech Republic. That's also very important to see that vote. That would be the only European country that voted no. Okay, then tell me if you know where these places are. One, I do. Two, second, I think. Third and fourth, I don't know. So interesting that they voted the way they do. So, all right, we'll start with our experts, Andrew and Joey, who are always on the front line of our test, guinea pig test. No. Expert test. Micronesia. Do you know where Micronesia is? How about Marshall Islands? How about Palau, P-A-L-A-U? How about Nauru, N-A-U-R-U? Come on, honestly. No to all of them. Isn't that amazing? And these four countries, most of us don't know. Yeah, Andrew, Brut. That's why Andrew is our number one call screener. Man, what kind of educational system produces such genius as this? Somewhere in the earth. Yeah, I would hope so, buddy. I would hope so. You know why? Because the UN at this point does not allow alien votes. UN at this point does not allow, say, Martian votes and things like that. So it would follow somewhere on the earth. But anyway, 138-9, you say, okay, it was just symbolic and it doesn't really mean anything. Well, it is meaning something big in rhetoric now for the Palestinian Authority. They are now celebrating this, and I understand their perspective. They would say, look, the whole world is turning in our favor and to recognize our rightful role, and they are now making demands. They are now saying, East Jerusalem, this is our eternal capital. Hang on. I am all for justice for the Palestinians. If you've listened to the show, you know that my take is that the Palestinians have been pawns in a larger battle with Arab leadership. That if Arab leadership had handled this rightly, that there would have been a two-state solution that would now be almost 65 years old in the Middle East. So I look at these people as pawns who in many ways have been hurt by their leadership more than helped by their leadership. And I look at the larger Muslim Arab world and say, why did you not absorb these refugees? Because most of them had not been living in Palestine, say, for 1,000 years or for 500 years. Most of them were emigres there within the last couple of 100 years. Some had pedigree going back before that, some just the last century. Why not absorb them? There had never been a Palestinian state. There had never been an East Jerusalem as a capital, or West Jerusalem, or an undivided Jerusalem as the capital of a Palestinian state. The notion had never existed. And it's only as Jewish immigration to the land picked up in the late 1800s that Arab immigration then picked up as well. But there did not have to be conflicts. The two could have lived side by side peacefully, if not for the fact that there is Islamic theology that says that land that was once under Islamic control cannot be lost. That is a terrible loss to Allah and his kingdom. And moreover, can't lose it to the Jews, because the Jews in traditional Islam are the sons of monkeys and pigs. And the end of the world will see the subjugation of the Christian world and the destruction of the Jews. That is current in lots of Islamic tradition. And although Jerusalem does not have the importance to Islam the way it has to Judaism, you can't even compare the two, Jerusalem still does have certain holiness associated with it. So for that to come back under Jewish control would be absolutely unthinkable. So for all of those reasons, I understand that there was resistance to the idea of a two-state solution, or Jews having some control of Palestine and a modern state of Israel being birthed there. Nonetheless, these Arabs, these people who now are known as Palestinians, have suffered terribly and continue to suffer, and they continue to be oppressed. I will repeat, though, the fault is not with Israel. Yes, Israel could do better, of course, in many ways, but the fault is not with Israel. The fault is with the Islamic mentality that wants to wipe out Israel. And I'll reiterate it again, because I still believe it's true, that if Palestinians were to put down their weapons and their goals to destroy Israel, there would be no more war. If the Israelis were to put down their weapons, there would be no more Israel. Okay, we come back. I want to talk to you about more of what's going on, some of the controversial things going on in reaction to this. Talk a little bit about what happened in the NFL over the weekend, because it's relevant. Take your calls. All right, very special offer we did this Friday for Nancy's birthday. We got such an outrageous response. I thought, all right, we'll do it today, tomorrow, and that's it. Get a copy of my book, The Real Kosher Jesus, the hardcover version. We alone have that. Get that. We'll pay the shipping. We'll give you a second copy of the hardcover free, plus the two-hour DVD debate moderated by Sid Roth, Who's the Real Kosher Jesus with Rabbi Shmuley. $75 value, $30, but it's only one more day after today. So call the order, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978, or go to our online bookstore, askdrbrown.org. Just click on the online bookstore.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I'm going to do something I've never, ever done before, but just for the fun of it, just for the fun of it. In a little while, I am going to read you a list of the different nations that voted against recognizing a Palestinian state, even observer status, in the United States, United Nations General Assembly last week, November 29th this is the week that passed, November 29th, 2012. I'm going to read off a list, and there are four countries in particular that are very obscure that most Americans would not have heard of. If you can call in and tell me why, just have to pick one of the countries, why they voted against this and therefore stood with Israel, I will give you a free copy. All right, Joey, what book should I send a free copy? No, don't send my Jeremiah commentary. That would not everyone's going to read that anyway. But a free copy of what? I know, 60 questions. 60 questions Christians ask about Jewish beliefs and practices. I'm going to send that out for free if you can answer my question. So here's the number to call, 866-348-7884. A number of things I want to talk to you about, but one of them does tie in with the vote to recognize a Palestinian state as an observer status, just like the Vatican is recognized, has observer status in the United Nations General Assembly. Now that status has been afforded to Palestine as a Palestinian state. There were 9 votes against it, 41 abstentions, 138 yes, 41 abstentions, 9 no's. Canada and America, vocal no's. So they voted no strongly. Czech Republic voted no. That was interesting to see. In fact, if you can find out, any of these, all right, you find out any of these and you call in and tell me why. All right, just pick anyone. Why did the Czech Republic vote no on this? What was their reasoning behind it? Do they have a history of philo-Semitism, standing with Israel? Do they have some other motivation? Panama voted no. Why Panama? Why did they vote no? Micronesia, you say, come again? Where is Micronesia? That's what you're going to tell us. Why did the people of Micronesia vote and say? And by the way, I'm not asking for your speculation because I don't know the answer to this question. I'm not asking for you to take a guess. Got it? So I'm only asking you to call if you actually have the information, because I myself did not have the opportunity, or if I did have it, neglected to use it, to look up the reasons for each of these votes. I was following more of the larger story. So I'm not asking for a guess, okay? Sorry, I should make that clear. I'm not, a lot of times I ask you a question because I have the answer. It's the opposite this time. I don't. So why did the Czech Republic vote against recognition of a Palestinian state? Why did Micronesia vote against it? Why did Panama vote against it? How about Marshall Islands? Marshall Islands, they voted against it. Yeah, where is Marshall Islands located? And then how about Palau? Not Luis Palau, the well-known evangelist, but the country of Palau, P-A-L-A-U. They voted against it. And then Nauru, N-A-U-R-U. That country also voted against recognizing a Palestinian state. So any of you find, there's one more I'll give you right after the break. Tell me why. Just look into it. Do a little read. Yeah, you're allowed to get online. You're allowed to check this time. You're allowed to get online, look into it. Find out what you can find out, and then tell me what you find out. Just pick any one of them and tell me what their reasoning was in voting the way they do, and you get a free, eye-opening, informative, edifying book. We'll be back.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So check this out. The phone lines are not ringing off the hook, which normally happens whenever there is a free offer of any kind. The phone lines are not ringing off the hook, which means you're having a little hard time digging up the answers. I just typed in one little search thing to check during the two-minute break, which is the longest break I get in 2 hours. Two-minute breaks we get along the way, one-minute breaks at other points. During the little two-minute break, I found out a general reason concerning Marshall Islands, Micronesia, Nauru, and Palau. They are all Pacific nations. Interesting to see this history, interesting to see what God will do for these nations as the years unfold. But it was a general statement. It didn't have any more details. I didn't find quotes from ambassadors to these countries. What about Czech Republic? What about Panama? And of course, Israel voted no. Oh yeah, you're going to call in and tell me why Israel vote? Yeah, that one I understand. And I understand America, Canada. Just want to get your feedback on the others. The offer still stands. Yeah, it's a little tough question. But look, after all, I'm not just a radio host. I'm a professor. And as a professor, I like to educate and teach and get people to think and stretch. So I'll put out the question one more time. Can you tell me why any of the nations, anyone, voted against recognition of a Palestinian state in the UN vote last week, last Thursday, November 29th. There are only nine nations, Israel, America, Canada, those we know the reasons. How about Czech Republic? How about Panama? How about Marshall Islands? How about Nauru, Palau, and Micronesia? Why did they also vote against it? 41 nations abstained, but we're not focusing on those. If you got an answer for any of them, free book coming your way, 866-348-7884. There are two Palestinian goals that have been put forth at the UN, and just some specific quotes. One is to have all disputed land declared occupied, and then have terrorists declared legitimate freedom fighters. If the state of Palestine is recognized, it will be easy for us to call on the parties of the Geneva Conventions to assemble in order to apply the Geneva Conventions to the territories of the occupied state. This includes applying the conventions to the prisoners, and in addition, we will be able to prosecute the Israelis and hold them accountable for actions and crimes that have been committed and continue to be committed against the prisoners in prison. So even if you have some suicide bomb or someone attempted suicide bombing, maybe they survived and others were killed, or they just went in and killed Israeli civilians, they should be recognized now as freedom fighters if there is a Palestinian state. And now the UN says, at least in theory, yes, there is. Avner Boesky, my friend in Israel, whom I interviewed in Israel live together in Jerusalem last October, so just a few weeks back, he asked the question, what does this resolution mean for the Middle East? So he says, number one, the Palestinian resolution is a basic breach of the Oslo Accords. It's a basic breach of the Oslo Accords. As a result, this would allow Israel to declare the so-called peace process null and void. Now, Israel, in response to the UN vote, has said that they are withholding $100 million of income that they have collected in taxes for the Palestinian Authority. They are withholding that. They will not turn that over to the Palestinian Authority because of the violation of prior agreements. They're also saying that they're going to go ahead with settlement building. And that, of course, has caused an outrage in other parts of the world. Britain is thinking of recalling its envoy to Israel over this. And then Canada, based on the fact that they were on the other side of this issue, standing with America, standing with Israel, they are considering pulling their people back right now from Israel and Palestinian Authority because of what's going on. So Avner Boesky writes, when Mahmoud Abbas, the prime minister of the Palestinian Authority, presented this resolution to the UN, He carried out a basic breach of the Oslo Accords signed in Washington, D.C. on September 13, 1993, and then supported by the European Union, the United States, the UN, and Russia. These accords require Jerusalem and Ramallah to engage only in direct negotiations. By appealing directly to the UN, the Palestinian Authority has technically violated and potentially forfeited the entire Oslo process. Avner says, number two, the UN is collaborating with the Palestinians in violating peace process agreements it has previously validated. And he gives details of that. Number three, there is no apparatus in this resolution which will safeguard Israeli security needs. Therefore, it cannot be acceptable to any Israeli government. Indeed, Mahmoud Abbas expressed common ground with the Jihadi Hamas organization in his UN address, accusing Israel of ethnic cleansing, colonial occupation, quote, excavations which threaten our holy places, quote, besieging our holy city of Jerusalem, targeting Palestinian citizens with assassinations, mass destruction of mosques, killings at military checkpoints, etc. He nowhere admits to the use of terror against Israel and says that Palestinian resistance is only nonviolent and peaceful. His only reference to terrorism, amazingly, is to state terrorism, by which he means Israeli counter-terrorism activities. Next on Avner's list, number four, there is no declaration on the part of the Palestinians that in the two-state solution, one of those states, Israel, is Jewish. No, 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 they will not say we recognize the Jewish state. Number five, the resolution opens the door to Palestinian lawfare, taking Israeli parliamentarians, military, and intelligence officials to the International Criminal Court in The Hague to face supposedly criminal charges. Number six, there's a Palestinian denial of any Jewish historical connection to the land of Israel. In language of this resolution, even the Jewish Jesus is co-opted into the Islamic replacement theology, while any mention of Jews is left out. This is part of the address to the UN. I come before you today from the Holy Land, the land of Palestine, the land of divine messages, ascension of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and the birthplace of Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, to speak on behalf of the Palestinian people in the homeland and in the diaspora. So Jesus becomes a Palestinian as opposed to a first century Jew. Next, the Palestinian Authority has demonstrated a poisonous mix of corruption, thuggery, nepotism, underground support for terror, blatant suppression of freedom of religion, freedom of the press, and freedom of assembly. Avner says, however, in this regard, based on the countries advocating for its inclusion in the UN, like Russia and China, the Palestinian Authority is in good company. And then lastly, the Palestinian Authority actually only represents one faction of the Arabs in that region. The strongest power is held by the PA's mortal enemies, the Jihadi Muslim Brotherhood Hamas, who systematically have jailed, tortured, and murdered PA, Palestinian Authority representatives, since their own election victory in January 2006. What does this mean in light of Scripture? Here are Avner's thoughts on that. Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, exists and has communicated his values, heart, and strategies in the Bible. That's what we follow. Yeshua, the Messiah of Israel, has granted gifts and callings to the Jewish people, which are irrevocable. These include the calling as a chosen people, the land of Israel, and its biblically mandated borders in the protective covenant of Genesis. The regathering of the Jewish people is an extraordinary divine strategy of last days, one which is being opposed by the nations of the world, and the international opposition will be the basis for the judgment of all nations at Yeshua's return. At the same time, God desires to pour out his mercy and kindness and grace on all peoples, including the Palestinians, who have suffered much, and to reveal to them that it is not Israel that is their enemy, but Satan that is their enemy, and it is the Jewish Jesus who is the Savior that they need. All right, let's see if we've got some answers here. Okay, Ruben in Las Vegas, can you tell me definitively about this vote?
Well, as far as I'm primarily concerned about the Czech Republic because I was stationed in Germany when I was in the Air Force, and I kind of got a feel for Europe and as far as their mindset. As far as Czech Republic, I think Czech Republic itself is one of the most secular countries in the world. I think I just checked the statistics, 10% Catholic, about 3 to 2% Protestant. They're very, and I think the rest of the population are either atheists or they didn't have a declared religion before Pagan. So having said that, I think they see a Palestinian state as like a radical religious state. I would guess they don't want to see a proliferation of religious states. They see Israel as a much more tolerant state. They tolerate all religion, Israel itself. So I think they stand with Israel on that basis. Even when it comes to homosexuality, I was researching about Israel. I saw a major campaign from the Interior Ministry of Israel as they were launching a Israel as a
gay tourist event. Yep. Hey, Ruben, tell you what, gotta go. Even though it's somewhat of a guest, it's a very educated guest. So stay on the line. We will get your contact info for the free book. Thank you for the call.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Just asking about the vote last week. So ironic, 1947, November 29th, the United Nations General Assembly votes to recognize two states, puts forth their partition plan for a two-state solution in Palestine that would have a home for the Jews and a home for the Arabs. Not to say that there'd be no one on either side that was Jewish or Arab, but that one would be Jewish governed, the other Arab governed. The Jewish leadership accepted it. The Arab leadership rejected it, hence the conflicts that we've had the last 65 years. So ironically, on the very same day, November 29th, 2012, so 65 years later, the UN General Assembly votes 138-9 with 41 abstentions, saying that they will recognize a Palestinian state as observer, giving them observer status. But Palestinians are now saying, "This is now we have our state, now we put forth further demands, now we're pressing this, 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 and this." So it's heating up that quickly. And Israel is responding by saying, well, you have now violated previous agreements by doing this. We're withholding funds and so on. There's debate in the states now. Should funding go on just the same? Should it be withheld? So things have heated up quite dramatically already. And then Palestinians saying, East Jerusalem, that's our eternal capital. No, it's not the eternal capital. It's not the lasting historic capital of a Palestinian state. That's a myth. It has been the capital, the one and only capital of the Jewish people for millennia. And now they Jews around the world for centuries pray every year, next year in Jerusalem, next year in Jerusalem, look forward to regathering and being there. But that's an aside because we're in the midst of rhetoric. The question is, why did nine nations vote saying, no, we don't accept this? Of course, we understand why. The United States voted that way. Canada, with a strong pro-Israel prime minister now. So Israel, Canada, America voted against it. We've heard one theory about Czech Republic. Now, I just did go online, so I'm not going to take any more calls about Czech Republic. We had one on that already. According to a report that I'm reading now online from Reuters, when Czechs cast the lone European no vote against the Palestinian Authority's bid for semi-statehood at the United Nations this week, it was no surprise from a country Israel has named as its best friend on the continent. Once the punchbag for aggressive neighbors before World War II, the Central European state of 10.5 million has long backed the Jewish state and its main ally, the United States. On Thursday, the Czechs joined Israel, the United States, six other nations in voting against a motion to grant the Palestinian Authority observer status, etc. Main reason is a center-right government that has distanced itself from the European mainstream on issues ranging from diplomacy and security to economic policy, often siding with Washington rather than fellow EU members. But history also plays a role. Israel can thank the former Czechoslovakia for gaining the upper hand in the Arab-Israeli War in 1948. When Prague broke a UN embargo to send its weapons, including 80 planes and trained pilots, including future Israeli President Ezer Weizmann, tipping the balance, Netanyahu said in the visit to Prague in May of this year, Israel has no better friend in Europe than the Czech Republic. All right, what about some of the Pacific Island nations? So Micronesia, Marshall Islands, Palau, Nauru, if I'm pronouncing these correctly. And what about Panama in Central America. Let's go to Jared in Wake Forest, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire. Hello. Yes, Jared, go ahead.
Yes, the reasons for Micronesia not voting for Palestine is that it was once a territory of the United States, and it is still in sovereign free association with the United States, and it's been independent of the United States since around 1970, since the 1970s.
Okay, and is that your guess or what you're fairly confident of?
I'm fairly confident that it's going to usually vote with the United States because of its former association with the United States.
All right. Well, I'll take that as a highly educated guess. And in either event, you get a free copy of 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices. So stay right there, Jared, and Andrew will get your contact info. All right. Normally, I wouldn't take a call after having a caller in the last week or two. We like to have some space between calls. But since we've changed the subjects, Reverend Bruce, you get to be back on the air.
All right. Thank God for favor.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I had to join the contest. I'm sorry. I want your
That's
book.
Right.
Anyway,
right.
I'm going to deal with Palau, Israel-Palau relationship. And I have actually looked this up, so this is not off the top of my head. Their relationship started in 1994, but I'm going to speak briefly the current of 2006. Palau had the highest voting coincidence with Israel in the United Nations, and it went so far as that the president of Palau, Tommy Hussein Remesu Jr., visited Israel, held a meeting with the Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and President Moshe Katsav, were the best of friends, and they even reiterated their friendship. Now, back in 1994, Israel was the first non-Pacific nation to declare diplomatic relationships with Palau at its independence in 1994. It favored Palau's admission to the United Nations and offered an economic aid to the young state. So they have diplomatic relationships, they're friends, and Israel offered aid and also sent convoys of agriculture, fishing experts to Palau and helping and training the local population. Israel maintains an embassy in the capital of Koror.
All right, awesome. Hey, I've got to jump in because we're almost out of time, but I just learned a whole lot that I did not know. All right. Stay right there, Reverend Bruce and Andrew will get your info. Also, Daniel and Janet, if you have information on other countries, so not Czech Republic, not Micronesia, and not Palau, then stay on the line. And if you've got factual information, then Andrew will get your contact info and we will get those free books out to you. So again, only stay on the line because it's going to be after showtime if you've got info on these other countries that we have not yet covered. All right, friends, in case you didn't hear, Friday we did something special for Nancy's birthday, kind of an outrageous special offer. I wish I could do this all the time, but trust me, we can't. We are putting together a package. We did it Friday. The results were so tremendous. I figured we'll just do it again. 60% off. That means you pay, I mean, it's like our cost, all right? 60% off. You get one copy of The Real Kosher Jesus hardcover. Get that postage paid. We give you another one free, plus the two-hour DVD debate moderated by Sid Roth with Rabbi Shmuley, Who's the Real Kosher Jesus? $75 value for $30, but you got to take advantage of this today or tomorrow. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or go to our online bookstore, askdrbrown.org. Click on the online bookstore. You can take advantage of that special offer there. My bottom line today, I think back to Psalm 2, why do the nations rage? I think of Zechariah 12 and 14, where all nations will fight against Jerusalem. And I know ultimately God will deliver his people.